In an attempt to save his marriage, a firefighter uses a 40-day experiment known as the Love Dare. Fireproof. Rated R.
Welcome to the Jesus Unfollower podcast. My name is Kevin, and I'm an atheist in the Bible Belt. On this podcast, we talk about religion and how it affects us as non-believers in America. I often use a humorous approach because, let's face it, religion is heavy, and we need to be able to laugh about it sometimes. And now your host, me. Okay, no, it's not really rated R. It's just more fun to say that. You know, I was a Christian my whole life until I was 26 years old, but it was on and off through my childhood going to Baptist churches. I didn't really get into church very heavily until I was in high school, about 16 years old. And so my experiences with Christian movies and media are actually very small. I haven't seen a whole lot of Christian movies. I did used to go to my youth pastor's house a lot, and they would be playing like family-friendly movies, but usually not really a lot of quote-unquote Christian movies. I do remember that they had the Guardian thing on your TV. I don't know what it's called. Maybe it is called The Guardian, but it takes any curse words that are in movies and it like puts subtitles on the screen of like lesser words, not curse words or whatever. And there was this animated movie called Rockadoodle. I don't know if you know that movie or not. We were watching it over there one day and they had that TV Guardian thing on. And he says, and one of the songs that the character sings is, "Cock-a-doo, what a day. The sun is shining brightly. Cock-a-doo, what a day." And so it says the word cock in there. And the old TV Guardian ain't going to let that shit slide. So instead of hearing the song, they subtitled it and like they mute it and it just says jerk-a-doo on the TV. Just subtitles, no sound, jerk-a-doo, what a day. And so it would always cut out, and that was hilarious. I saw my fair share of Christian cringe in the church for sure. The Heaven's Gates, Hell's Flames play that the church would put on. I was on the drama team there for a little while. I was a Roman soldier at one point. In another skit, I was Jesus. So I've seen a lot of cringe, but I never really saw a lot of Christian movie cringe. And so now I'm excited to do this podcast because I get to watch a lot of these movies that I missed, but I'm not watching them through a Christian lens like I would have been back then. Like, oh, this is so inspirational. Oh, yeah, Jesus. Another funny story about my Christian days is that I had one of my friends take my remote for my dish. I had Dish Network back in the days when we had satellite dishes. And I had him put a passcode on my dish so I couldn't watch shows that had like mature content. I was all in for Christ. But I still never really watched many Christian movies. And I became an atheist in 2009. And so any Christian movies that have come out in the last 13 years, I have not seen at all. And the movie that I'm talking about today, you know it because you saw the title of this episode, is Fireproof, starring Kirk Cameron. In typical Christian movie fashion, the Rotten Tomatoes score is really skewed. The actual movie critics give it a 38%, and the audience gives it an 82%. There are 21 critic reviews, and there are 25,000 plus audience reviews. So most critics don't waste their time on this. They would say, well, they're just trying to oppress our faith by rating our movies, you know, at 38%. They just don't get it. They're not watching it through a Christian lens or whatever. That these movies just suck. And people just love them. The Christians just love them just because they're Christian movies. It's like everything else. Christian media, Christian music, movies, whatever it is, slap a Christian label on there, automatically they love it. I know. I was one of those people. Fireproof was written by the Kendrick brothers, Alex and Steven, directed by Alex. It was released September 26th, 2008. The movie grossed $33.5 million at the box office The budget for this movie? $500,000. This thing cleared $33 million. I think it's just a good business decision to make Christian movies. The movie definitely starts off on a weird foot by, it says 25 years earlier, and it's a daughter who's in bed, and a little girl, and she's like, "Mommy, I want to marry Daddy." Literally 58 seconds into the movie. And the mom's like, "You do? Well, you can't do that because Mommy's already married to him." Way to set the tone. Cut to Kirk Cameron at the fire station. He's obviously the boss there, getting onto one of his employees. And then cut to the hospital and what we can only assume to be Kirk Cameron's wife in some sort of hospital administration role. And not exactly sure what her job is at this point, but one thing we do know is that she is a bad actress. A couple lines of dialogue will tell you that. Then she turns around and runs into this goofy-ass doctor, and you can see there's going to be some sort of trouble afoot because his intentions are to get in those pants. Then she goes and sees her parents in what's supposed to be like a serious moment. And she says, "Mama, I wish you could talk," because her mom had a stroke, and her mom just stares at her, and I couldn't help but bust out laughing alone in my living room watching that, because she looked like the old guy from Home Alone, from the first Home Alone, when Kevin goes up to the counter to pay for something, and the old man is up there at the counter, and he just looks down and stares at Kevin. That's exactly what she looks like when she's just staring at her daughter, who's like, "Mama, I wish you could talk." But I guess she's nailing her dialogue, though. Then we get into the real drama of the movie, where our suspicions are confirmed. They are husband and wife, and they get in a fight over several things. She doesn't leave him any cereal for breakfast, which honestly, that would piss me off too. But then she talks about his porn use, and she talks about his wanting to save for a boat instead of fixing things around the house. So we've got our bedrock foundation of the movie here. Trouble at home, goofy-ass doctor at work flirting. There's going to be some conflict. Then we cut to the gym where Kirk and his best friend, Michael. I'm just going to call Kirk Cameron Kirk because I still don't even know his character's name. Kirk and his co-worker slash best friend Michael are pumping some iron to third day. "Pump some iron for Jesus Christ. Go ahead and bench that 225. And then they turn the third day down for a little heart-to-heart. "Michael, it ain't working, brother." And then Michael makes a couple terrible analogies. One, like, "Hey, if you don't know, it's like that treadmill over there. If you don't know how to run it, it ain't going to work for you." And then he does another analogy about a rose, saying that if you treat the rose right, it's going to bloom. Doesn't really make sense, but we get the gist. Then we get to the real big blow-up scene between Kirk and his wife, where, again, she screws him on the food, doesn't leave him any pizza, he blows out her candle, then it's on. And she talks about his porn use, and that fucking boat again, and then he yells, "Shut up." This is actually pretty good acting by Kirk Cameron, I think. He probably went to a place mentally where he like pictured the LGBTQ community or something to channel that absolute rage that he was when he was yelling at his wife in this scene. Again, her acting is terrible, but his is pretty good here. And then they say they want to call it quits. She said that she's done, and he says, "Fine, get the hell out." Except he doesn't say hell because it's a Christian flick. He goes outside and absolutely rages on the trash can again. Most likely picturing a homosexual or somebody of that nature in his head, just completely kicks the shit out of it, throws it up against the house. And I got to give credit. I'll give credit where credit's due. Okay. That's one thing I'm going to do on this podcast is, although these movies are super cringe, I'm going to give credit where credit's due. And it was actually pretty funny when he beats the shit out of this trash can and then looks and the neighbor's just staring at him, this old neighbor. Oh, and I just remembered his character's name because the old man said it. It's Caleb. Catherine, that's his wife's name, by the way. I don't think I've established that yet. Catherine throws her wedding ring in the drawer. Caleb goes to work the next day, overhears Michael and his great relationship with his wife, so you can see it building. Like, how do they have this? How do they have this great relationship? Surely it's not going to be something about Jesus Christ later in the movie. Little back and forth scene of Caleb and Michael talking about the marital problems, and then the girls' night at Bahama Breeze or wherever it is, talking about how Kirk Cameron sucks, and he's going to be the one to leave, not me. I already decided it. And then she has a breakdown over her shrimp or whatever. More third day plays. We got a couple of cars that pull up to each other. We got two teen girls in one car. We got two teen boys in another car. They're going to race. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen since Caleb works for the fire department. In the scene that definitely sucked up the majority of this $500,000 budget for the movie, there's a car after the wreck that's stuck on the train tracks. And you guessed it, here comes the train. So they got to move the car off the tracks. Everybody helps out. They pull the car off. Michael, Caleb's friend, almost gets his head taken off by the train. It barely misses him. And then, at the 21-minute mark, first mention of God. We have our first mention of God in the movie, 21 minutes in. Michael is in the grass, thanking the Lord that the train did not take his head off. After the scare at the train tracks, the guys are back at the firehouse, and one of them says, "Ain't you afraid of dying?" And Michael's like, "Nah, I know where I'm going." And I always hated that. I can't stand that phrase, "I know where I'm going." Like, it's just, I guess when I was a Christian, I probably used that too. But I don't know. I hate it now that I'm an atheist for sure. And Caleb gets asked if he believes in heaven, and he said, "I don't know." Then we meet Caleb's parents for the first time, and I swear to God, I thought that his dad was Dave Ramsey at first. "Hey, Dad, how you doing?" "Better than I deserve. You know, you really should be eating red beans and rice. What's going on in your marriage?" "All you gotta do is eat red beans and rice and sign up for Financial Peace University, and everything will be fixed in your marriage, son." There's some obvious tension between Caleb and his mom, so Caleb and his dad, who is not Dave Ramsey, go take a walk by the lake and talk about their marriages. Caleb's dad talks about how his mom and him almost split up, but the Lord did a work in us. The Lord did a work in us. Was this filmed in my hometown and the entire cast made up of people that I went to church with? Because I've heard that phrase a million times in my life. His dad tries to talk to him about Jesus, but Caleb ain't having it. So his dad says, "Have you agreed to start the divorce process with your wife?" And Kirk says, "Not yet." And so now we get to the real gist of the movie. Dad gives him a gift. He says he's going to mail him something and tells him to hold off on proceeding with the divorce for 40 days. 40, the most biblical number they could think of. It's what saved his dad's marriage, and his dad is confident it's going to be able to save Kirk's too. Cut to Catherine eating lunch at the hospital. It's only her at the table. It's a good thing there's no creepy doctor around to hit on her. Oh wait, here he comes. Dude looks like Gomer Pyle in a lab coat, but I guess when your husband is just a complete piece of shit, anybody will do the trick at this point. Back at the firehouse, Michael gives another analogy. This time it's that salt and pepper are very different, but then he glues them together and he talks about marriage vows and how you can't break them apart now because they have become one. So he's like the king of analogies at this point. The mail has arrived at Caleb's house, the gift from his father, and it is the love dare. He's got to do whatever it says each day to try to save the marriage. And day one is say nothing negative to your spouse at all. Seems simple enough. She makes a little comment about how she thought he would have went to the dry cleaners already, and he bites his tongue. So day one, success. Day two is an unexpected gesture to show kindness. And what does he do? He pours her a cup of coffee. Bare minimum, Caleb. Bare minimum, bro. He pours her a coffee and she says, "No thanks." Ain't nobody got time for that. remember that old internet meme about ain't nobody got time for that? That old YouTube video? Good times. Day three, buy something nice for your wife. So he goes with shitty flowers. The shittiest flowers they have. And a little box of chocolates. She, of course, hates them and scoffs at them as any normal person would. Then there's a scene, that I guess, to kind of ease the tension between this marriage that's failing. They have like a chugging hot sauce scene. and I'm not really going to get into it, except I thought it was funny that the hot sauce is called Wrath of God. Because, of course it is. Wrath of God does sound like a metal Christian band, and I would bet my life that there is a metal Christian band called Wrath of God. You know, I used to be in a Christian band, and Christian bands have really terrible names. Go back even further, back in the AOL Instant Messenger days, one of my screen names was Bloodwashed 522, because I was washed in the blood of Jesus, and the 522 was for Galatians 522, which is the fruits of the Spirit. And then the band that I was in, so I was in the like the youth worship band at church, and they sort of adopted the name Bloodwashed at first. At first, that's what we were called. So the youth pastor would be like, Bloodwashed, because we were like a hybrid of worship band slash Christian rock band. And I would die to go back and hear some of the original music we wrote, because I know it was fucking terrible, but I would still love to hear it. But we were like a hybrid. We were the worship band at church, but also we played rock music and we would do shows at freaking like skate parks and stuff. But at first we were called Bloodwashed, and I don't really know. I definitely did not recommend that name. I think maybe the youth pastor just liked my AIM name and so called us Bloodwashed at first. But then we changed our name to, what, ready for it? A Pledge to Die. A Pledge to Die was our band name, because it's like making a pledge to die to your flesh daily. So there's my little Christian band tangent. And also one of the songs that we covered, funny enough, that I didn't think about until right now, was Fireproof by Pillar. But I digress. Day 4, Caleb is supposed to call his wife and ask her if she needs anything. So he just calls her and says, "Do you need anything?" very robotically. And she says, "No." And then he's like, "Okay, goodbye." So just going through the motions. Caleb's just going through the motions. And then to make things worse, when she gets home, she catches him looking at porn. She doesn't see the porn on the screen, but he's clicking like a motherfucker trying to close out all those pop-ups. You guys remember those pop-ups from back in the day? That was hell. Anyways, he's closing out the pop-ups as fast as he can, unsuccessfully, so he shuts the monitor off and just starts acting like he's reading a magazine at the computer. So busted, obviously, and she knows it. And then they blow up and have a fight. Again, she says that she's not buying into this nice guy routine, and then he goes ham on the trash can again, this time with a baseball bat. Caleb calls his dad to say, "Look, this thing ain't working." And he says, "Son, it's only day 4. And he says, "Let me guess, you're doing the bare minimum, right?" And so then Kirk Cameron aggressively hangs up his flip phone. And I gotta say, flip phones were so much cooler, right? It's too bad that we all had to, like, graduate into smartphones, which are better in every way except for the convenience factor of them being small in your pocket and being able to be so fucking cool when you hang up or answer the phone. God, flip phones were awesome, especially the Motorola Razr. Cue the montage of his wife falling for the doctor, Gomer Pyle. "It's a slow fade." I think it's Casting Crowns. I don't know. I'm just trying to go off of my Christian music memory here. Is that Mercy Me or Casting Crowns? "It's a slow fade." And she's falling for the doc. And Kirk is struggling with his porn addiction. We fast forward to day 18. Candlelight dinner. She scoffs at the dinner the same way that she did at the flowers. Goes and looks at herself in the mirror. Gathers herself. Comes back and savagely says, "Let me be clear about something. I do not love you." To which Kirk Cameron replies, with nothing, he just blinks 1,000 times. He goes outside and calls his dad, who of course is a psychic. He's like, "This is when it gets hard," before he even answers the phone. Because he's like, "Oh son, she's going to hate that dinner. And she's going to tell you that she don't love you. And then you're going to blink a lot." Dad tells him to stick with it. He's coming to see him tomorrow. And this is when you really see that this is a very low budget movie because there are just like a few sets. The firehouse, the path by the lake where they walk, their house, that's about it, besides the scene where they pull the car off the tracks. Dad tells him how right around the halfway point is where it gets tough, because that's where you find out where your heart's at. Because his mom was on the brink of leaving his dad, but his dad used the tactics in the book to save their marriage. And he said, this is when you check yourself, and are you just going through the motions, or is your heart really in it? Dear old dad isn't holding back in the conversation here and basically tells his son that he's going to hell for violating God's standards. In the ultimate setup move, his dad is just playing games with him, getting Kirk Cameron to talk crap about his wife. And then Kirk Cameron says, how am I supposed to love somebody who continuously rejects me? And his dad just casually walks over to a cross that is in the field, because apparently there was some Jesus camp that was there. And he leans up against the cross real slick and says, that's a good question, son. And then Kirk's like, no, it's not the same. Isn't it though, you little sinning son of a bitch? And his dad says, I couldn't love your mother until I loved Jesus. That's pretty fucked up. Caleb agrees with his dad that he needs Jesus. If only this guy knew what he was creating by converting Kirk Cameron to Christianity. Well, that was actually a beautiful ending to the movie. Oh, there's another hour still? Cool. Let's play the back nine, I guess. Caleb tells Michael that he's come to Jesus. He confesses that his heart has not really been in the love dare so far. Michael drops a bomb by saying that he actually has been married once before, and Caleb doesn't know it. And he's like, man, I just didn't do it the right way. I tried to get her back, but it was too late. God meant marriage to be for life. Flirting between Catherine and the goofy doctor, she tells him that it would be nice if her mom had some better equipment to help her deal with her medical issues. So, of course, you know that that means Doc's going to pull through. More on that later. Then we get a fire scene, which actually I forgot about this scene when I said that the train scene took up most of the budget. I forgot about this scene when I said that. So this one probably actually took up a little more of the budget. This is probably like 2/3 of the budget, and the other one was like a third. And anyways, the scene was actually pretty good. Pretty good. Kirk Cameron goes in the house, rescues a little girl, comes out. He's got burns on his arm. And it's all to set up the fact that he's got to go to the hospital where the dude who's trying to take his wife is, and they meet each other. The doc is there kind of helping to treat Kirk Cameron, and then Catherine walks up and he's like, oh, this is her husband. And he gives like the little sad puppy dog eyes. And even though he's this hero for saving this little girl from the fire, his wife is still very cold to him, and so he's talking to his parents on the phone about it. He's upset. He can't seem to win his wife's love back. And again, another cool flip phone hang up. Man, I miss those. Sometimes I just want to like buy a flip phone just to have to just make calls on. And I'll use my iPhone for everything else, texting, internet, social media, whatever. But I'm just going to have a separate phone that I make calls on just so I can do the fucking cool hang up. I miss that so much. So he's not feeling the love from his wife. He goes back to the computer, old trusty. He's looking at boats, and a little ad pops up for a hot woman in his area. You got boats, you got porn. This is everything he wants. Boats and porn, boats and porn. I gotta give me my boats and porn. And he's struggling, but he resists the temptation to give in to the porn. Matter of fact, he just takes his whole computer and smashes it Office Space style and then throws it away, like in Parks and Rec when Ron Swanson sees his own house on Google Maps. You didn't have to destroy your whole computer, man. You could have just got like a porn blocker or something. But he opened up the Love Dare and he reads it, and his dad says, parasites are going to come into your life, so you got to get rid of all the parasites. They will suck the life out of your marriage. So he just decided to take no chances and completely destroy the computer. And just when he thinks that getting rid of the computer is going to help things, she gets some actual nice flowers from the dock. And she serves Caleb's ass up with divorce papers. Day 23, divorce. Oh, shit. I guess we're going to have to pivot, son. I didn't plan for this when I wrote this book for you. So, you're screwed. You remember how Catherine needed some equipment for her mom? Well, she goes to look at it and somebody says, I bet you're excited. Because some gentleman called and already paid for everything. So here we go. The doc. Man, he's making all the right moves. He got the roses. He's paid for this equipment. There's absolutely no way she's going to go back to her husband now. This movie will not end well, right? She goes and thanks the doctor and grabs onto his hand. Ma'am, you are married. You are married to Kirk Cameron's character in a Christian film, and that is a lot of alliteration. This is the part of the movie where the shit hits the fan. Caleb finds the letter that the doctor sent with the roses, and he's going to the hospital to confront that ass. He goes and he says, stay away from my wife, you goofy son of a fucking bitch. Or something like that. I don't know. I think I'm paraphrasing. But, and then he balls his fist up and says, thanks for helping me with my hand, doc. And so, be warned, Gomer Pyle. Then, in a surprise move, the doctor takes a wedding ring out of his drawer. So he's married too. Maybe his marriage is on the rocks, or maybe he's just a cheating son of a bitch. We really don't know. After he gets his talking to by Caleb, he sort of blows her off. And then we get this sad montage of Caleb and Catherine both like dining alone separately. And then there's some fire stuff mixed in while Mercy Me plays in the background. Or I don't know, they're all Mercy Me, right? Catherine calls out of work sad or sick, whatever. She's just laying in bed and Caleb checks to see if she needs anything. And he goes and gets her Chick-fil-A anyway, like a boss. That's how you do it, Caleb. Now you're learning. Now you're stepping up. I got you the Duck Dynasty combo. And sponsor, shocker that Chick-fil-A is sponsoring Fireproof. But, you know, every day's a surprise. You never know what's going to happen. Then we find out the reason why she stays home. It's because she found the book. She found the book with the 40 days of how to treat your wife better. 40 days to a better marriage from Financial Peace University. And he's like, when did you find it? And she says, yesterday. And then she said, what day are you on? And he said, 43. God, what a boss. I mean, first he comes in with a Chick-fil-A. And then he says he's on day 43. But wait, Kirk, there's only 40 days in here. Well, who says I have to stop? I'm saving this goddamn marriage. Kirk busts out the acting chops, gets down on his knees and says, I need to tell you something. I am sorry. And he says that God has given him a new love that he never had before for his wife. So just like his dad said, I couldn't love your mom until I found Jesus. Kirk can't love his wife until Jesus shows him what true love is. She says that she needs a little bit of time to process this. So she goes back to the hospital to buy some linens. And she finds out it was not the doctor who paid for all of her mom's medical stuff. It was Caleb, her husband. And earlier in the movie, I didn't mention this part, but she said that he had $24,000 in savings that he was saving up for that boat. Well, guess what? The equipment that he paid for? $24,000. Now, the doctor did help out with $300, but that was it. The other $24,000 came from Caleb. She's in shock. She rushes home, gets her wedding ring out of the drawer, and jets to the firehouse to talk to Caleb to work things out with her hubby. It's kind of sweet when she shows up at the fire station. It's kind of cringy, but it is sweet. But, of course, it ends up being about Jesus. I want whatever happened in you, Caleb, to happen to me too. It can. His name's Jesus. Then there's a twist at the end of the movie, and I think they thought it would be a bigger twist. To me, it wasn't that big of a deal, but it turns out that his dad was actually wanting to leave his mom, and she's the one that did the love dare on him instead of the other way around. So I guess Caleb's just kind of been treating his mom like garbage for the last couple of years because he thought that she was wanting to leave his dad, but it was the other way around. I don't know. The twist didn't really work for me. It's whatever, but I will give this a 3 out of 10 on the cringe scale. It wasn't too bad. There were some parts that were cringy. The acting was really bad by some of the actors, but overall, I give it a 3 out of 10 on the cringe. If you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please rate and review the podcast. Share it on your favorite social media platform. Aren't you glad that I made it through the whole thing without making a single growing pains joke? Not bad, huh? Please make sure you subscribe. See you next time. To sign up for a private community for ex-Christians, or to join the Comments from Christians newsletter, head over to JesusUnfollower.com.